Off the Ball. GAA.
This whole circuit where guys are going from club to club to club, making a nice few bob, tax-free, completely in contravention of the law of the land, and doing it in plain sight.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
My name is Sean Welsh, and I'm a long time around.
He was a big fancy anyway.
He was. Not anymore.
No, you're right, man.
If the Tour de France was in March, you would have won it 7 times.
Yeah.
We threw the bikes in the corner, and we went on the beer for 4 years.
If you came down to Carrick to ride your bike, you were guaranteed to go home in an ambulance.
Kelly goes for it. Kelly takes it.
Bennett now going. The green jersey of Sam Bennett.
Hello, friends. My name is Sean Welsh. I started in 1957-58. And I had a good, enjoyable life. Thank you a lot.
My name is Martin Ward. And I did a bit of cycling in the 60s and 70s. Okay. That's it.
You're very bashful, Martin. My name is Bobby Sheehan. I started in 67, 68 as a young guy. And I'm still involved with Carrick Wheelers to this day. Done a bit of cycling like Martin, but not as good as Martin.
we used to buy fishing rods in here at one point. And then bikes would be built here. There was a man working here, I think Dan Brennan.
Famous Dan.
He used to build bikes for us out of
nothing.
Old bits and pieces. And that would be your first bike. You might ride a league race with it. Well, in our house there was 6 or 7 of us racing, so we used to be fighting over the bikes. The best fella would get the best bike. My father was one of the founder members of Carrick Wheelers.
Mick Ward.
He used to manage the tip team. I think he managed Sean in the Ross Fountain. And Jimmy, my brother, would have been riding the race.
That's right.
Patsy as well.
Patsy was a famous rider,
So that was kind of the way we were involved. Then it progressed for Kelly came along.
So second generation.
Generation.
Yeah, he was kind of a fella came out of nowhere. No history in cycling at all. So it's strange, you know, but I think that Sean's generation were there for, you know, they were the conduit for
that. Yeah, we were ahead of that.
Without them there wouldn't have
I
been
suppose there wouldn't
the club
be
was
right
there. And so
54 the club started.
Yeah, the club, the tradition was there. So the fellas came like Sean Kelly, Bobby Power, all those guys. They had a club to join and
the foundation was there.
So the history of the cycling in Carrick is huge.
As a young guy I used to go with Sean, he brought us to the races and we would be only 15, maybe 16, and they would be grown men.
And
you'd be riding, you could end up at the end of the season if you won a few prizes, you'd be end up as a senior and you'd be riding 100 mile races at 15 or 16, like, you know. But it was a different world.
It was enjoyable, I think, too.
But there was racing in back at the turn of the century down in, I remember seeing a photograph of a race down in Fidown. David Cooney, my brother-in-law, has a photograph. He started and they were the only old stone roads, you know. But there's a history going back.
Cycling was different in those days because you had one big event, the Ross Tolton. That was the thing.
That was the goal.
So even in Carrick, almost would have a team in it.
Yeah,
it would be the Tipperary team, but mostly Carrick. The riders, the likes of Sean, then there was Mick Woods, there was more Joe Cashin.
That's right.
Always five.
It was a home of cycling. You can nearly say that.
You could bring a Ross team out of the town, out of the one club, or the mix of the two. Ryan rode Rosses with
And good riders.
Good riders came out of it, you know.
But the thing about all them fellas was
Sean Kelly, as good as he became, trained with all them.
Yes.
And they were good enough, you know, they were there in the background. Which he used to come back when he was at his
peak.
He'd come back to Carrick every year.
Oh, he never forgot.
Train through the winter with them fellas and go out and win the Paris-Nice, which was the best. One of the best early season classics. So I used to say to him, Sean,
training
in Carrick with no Bobby Power and Tony Ryan.
How many did he win?
He won that seven times. And I always used to say to him, if the Tour de France was in March, you would have won it seven times.
Right.
But the training in Carrick was so hard.
Yeah.
Like, this is the thing about Carrick. That if you came down to Carrick to ride your bike, you were guaranteed to go home in an ambulance. They'd kill you.
Yeah, there was no mercy, Sean.
You know,
yeah.
They were savage. Yeah. And that's all over the country. They used to come at one point to train in Carrick because of that. Kelly was there.
Yeah.
And they knew that if they wanted to race at a top level in Ireland, now he'd go away when come February or March with the team, whatever team he was riding on. But anyone like Bobby Power used to train with Kelly for the whole winter because he knew when Sean was gone, Bobby would be racing at the top level then for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
And that was the benefit of Carrick. And it's still the same now.
Yeah. Would there be other cyclists in Carrick that were at Sean Kelly's level at the time? Or even better than
the thing was that Sean didn't look at it that way.
Yeah.
It was a homely event.
He didn't care. Like, I give up cycling when I was young, but what he used to do was when he'd come back, he'd say, "You're coming out training with us." And I'd say, "Jesus, Sean, I haven't even a bike." He'd give me a bike.
Yeah.
Because he knew I was strong enough to survive. He'd use me as cannon fodder.
He fully used ammunition.
So I might last 80 or 90 miles with him at his pace.
Yeah.
But he had no kind of pretension. He was just normal with me.
He was happy with these guys.
It was a huge kind of unwinding thing for him.
Yes.
To come back down to earth and go back again. You know, he lived a very simple kind of life for the winter, all those winters, and I think that's what kept him at the top for so long. You know, he just came back, he was the very same. He phoned me last night, he was still the same. You know, he was after being in the tour of Italy all week, and you could hear him commentating, and he's absolutely brilliant at that, but when he phones you, it's like
back to normal. Left.
Flipping 50 years ago, it's the same.
Yeah, same Kelly, yeah.
Ordinary fella, you know. And that's what makes Kelly unique, I think, in a way, you know. Although, we shouldn't be talking about the one man all the time, but you can't talk about cycling without talking about Kelly because of what he did. You know. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
So that breeding ground in
Carrick
was what made him really. Aside from Kelly, I suppose all the other cyclists that were breeded here as well.
Oh yeah,
for all the different race win on the local scene, like.
Well, yeah, there was fellas who had a huge influence on Sean. He learned everything from here. Because there was guys there who would eat you without salt, is the way you'd put it. Every trick in the book would be used. If you turned up as a bright young talent in Carrick to go training with Kelly and them, they'd make a right fool out of you. And it was up to you to survive that. They'd say, okay, if he's any good, he'll come back again. Some did, some didn't.
Yeah. You know,
that was the survival thing. That when I say they'd make a fool of you, you might be full of power and full of energy, and for the first 40 or 50 miles, they'd say to you, "Jeez, you're good, you're great." And so you'd be out there thinking you were. When your energy disappears and there's another 30 or 40 mile to go,
tough luck. You're left there to die. And that's what they do. They leave you there with nothing, starving, hard to get home. You might have, what they'd say is, we'll send an ambulance for you. That was the reality of it. Yeah. Out on the pike coming out of Dungarvan, there was a lot of lads left.
For dead.
There
were a lot of good men died on that road.
Some of them, it was so bad, some of them would go into a house starving, looking for a cup of tea, or and you imagine of a Sunday, people in the house seeing some fella coming in with cycling gear on him, trembling with hunger. That was the reality of it. It happened to me a few times.
Yes,
it happened to a lot of good lads.
We were on the Mitchellstown run. Remember the Mitchellstown run?
Yeah.
We used to go to Mitchellstown in the winter, and it was snowed. It had snowed the night before or something, and. We hit coming into Mitchellstown on the back road, and it was all packed snow. Sure, we came on a bend, and the whole lot went down, you know. But I actually got a bad start, but I kept going. Joe Kelly, Lord Merson, Sean's brother Joe, shepherded me home. There is some, I have to be careful what I say here, but left me for the ambulances, but Joe was the ambulance for me. But we got as far as Clonmel on the promise that we could go into. Chops Coyley's house in Clonmel.
I heard that story. Yeah,
and he'd feed us, you know, and that, and he went in, and we got tart and lots of tea and all that, and it got us to Carrick that day, which was a great story, but a great time. But it's hard for anybody to believe how you can weaken so much, you know. That you think you wouldn't make it over to the counter there, like to be that bad. Like, well, Joe actually had to push me into.
Weaken but strengthen. If you know what I mean. Yeah. In terms of it was the making of me, really. Like, you know,
everybody had to go. Everybody went through it. Like,
yeah. Well, it was a baptism of fire always. It was pure savagery.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah.
But that was. If you survived, I mean, I remember Tony Ryan said to me and Kelly one time, if ye survive a winter's training, ye'll win. And he was right. If you survive, he'd have a programme laid out. It could be 8 weeks. He'd build it. We wouldn't know what the hell we were going to do Saturday. So it'd be Saturday and Sunday. During the week, you had to mind yourself and be okay for those 2 days. But he'd have it worked out then. It could be like a 100-mile spin along the coast road or somewhere. And it was, when you get home, you could be sitting in a chair for 3 or 4 hours.
4 years to come.
Not able to make a cup of tea. You're so bad. That would be Saturday. Sunday, you did it again. You recovered during the week. But the thing about that was, when you got to March or April, when the racing started, in your back of your mind, you're going to say, well, I'm after doing that. You're fucking hell. If I don't win after that, what the hell is it about? Yeah. You know, he had you built up that training. And that's what Kelly did in his pro career. That was his breeding ground, and he continued that. And it actually worked for him all through his career, which was amazing. I used to look at this and think, how? Because the big teams, they'd have training camps. They were operating on a different level. But Kelly would come home and just
dabble with the lads.
Go with the lads. And I think that's the unique thing about Carrick, you know, that's there still to this day. I'd have fellas come into my house, they come down once a year. They're afraid to go into Carrick to go training, because what they say is, if we go in there, we won't be able to drive back to Dublin. They'll get hammered. Yeah. But some of them would. They'd brave it in. But for the last couple of years, they didn't.
Yeah.
And Sean himself, last November, he came. And I said to him, are you going for the spin with the lads? And in Sean's language, he said, they'd fucking kill you. That's exactly what he said. Now, there's a fella here who goes with the spin. Keith Barry is up there. He knows exactly what I'm... He's one of the culprits.
The biggest culprit.
Yeah. So that's kind of what Carrick is about from a cycling point of view, from what I've seen.
Yeah.
And does Sam Bennett come back now for the winter? Does he go through the same?
No, well, I'll tell you one story about that. It was about... Just 3 years ago, Sean rung me and he said, there's 9 or 10 of us gathered outside the old ESB office. Will you come in? We're going for a spin. So I said to him, Sean, look, I'm only doing like 25 kilometres an hour. That's all we're doing, he said, you see. So, stupidly enough, I cycled in. Benish was there, and about 40 other fellas were there. And these were all racing men. So I was looking at him thinking, Jesus Christ, up the Clonmel Road, 35 kilometres an hour.
Yeah.
We got as far as, they were doing 100 kilometres. And we got as far as outside Kilmanahan, up
Ballymacarbery.
Yeah.
That's where I cracked. But the faster the bastards were going.
Yeah.
But, like, you can't believe what they tell you. You know, they went around. I didn't last the spin. I went home over the Nair Valley.
Oh, look at him to get home.
Yeah. But when I got home, Sean called into me and he said, where the fuck did you go? Now, excuse the language, but this is the kind of language that goes on. I said to him, Sean, I couldn't climb. I just turned out. We waited for you at the top of the hill for 5 minutes, he said, you know. But, and it got easy then. But
the damage was done.
100 kilometres. So, you know, you want to be fit to do that. I just wasn't fit enough, you know. But
yeah.
You'd still chance it. But Bennett was there, and he was at the front just ploughing along. No pressure on him.
Yeah.
He's a pro, you know. So if you come to Carrick, that's what you might come across accidentally, you know. You could just go in for an old spin with the gang, and Sam Bennett could be there, or Sean Kelly, or anyone, you know. That's just it.
1954, the club started. That's a long time ago.
Yes.
And it's going since, actually. It's a long time ago, 1954.
Yeah, like Sean rode his first Ross Talton in 1958. Yeah. Jesus Christ, like.
Yeah.
And he rode 14 of them then after that.
You never got sent, Sean.
No, not yet even.
The fig roll got you a long way. Famous fig roll story. Yeah. Ryder Ross and the fig roll.
Yeah.
How many days had you?
8 days.
8 days. The promise of a bit of food in the pocket, you know. Afraid to eat it.
But there was a good rivalry between Carrick when we used to travel to Dublin, we'll say.
Yeah.
There was a crowd of fellas up there.
Oh, you get recognised.
They used to call us the Culshies.
Yeah, yeah. But they're up today. That's
you know, knew kind of what they thought of us. Yeah. We were just kind of these rough country.
Yeah, mold. Yeah.
So it gave us an incentive to beat them. That was the, yeah. And when we did, it was...
They always had all the gear, didn't they?
They were the city slickers.
Stickers, yeah. Call
them.
Yeah.
They had the fancy, everything modern and good stuff, you know, but we were kind of... Bits and pieces on bikes.
You'd nearly be ashamed to go out with your bike or something, you know.
But you still beat them, no?
Sorry?
You'd still beat them.
Oh, well no, some of them, yeah.
After that kind of a winter of training that I described, you might. They were good as well.
I lived in Dublin for 5 years, and I remember Joe Kelly, Lord of Mercy, introduced me to the Orwell Wheelers, you know. And I was lucky enough to come on the young Stephen Roach, you know, along with, and a guy called Steve Flynn used to organise, do you remember Steve?
I remember him, yeah.
And he used to organise the spin, like, you know, but I remember in the winter time now, the spin that they would organise, like, say, before Christmas, would be more of a tour than a training spin, you know, and they'd have all the bikes, and they'd have mudguards on them, and they'd have
all the
kind of touring gear on. Then you come back, we go back to Dublin after Christmas, and you go out, and they'd have all these real bikes, and you'd be still on your gate of a bike, like, you know, and the hummer would start then, you know. They used to train pretty hard at that stage, you know, but they were it was an excellent introduction to the levels of preparedness. Like, it was different from Carrick. Wouldn't be as hard as Carrick.
Yeah, but there was a kind of a, once February or March came, the old training bike went away, and fellas would be shaving their legs, and they'd tan. The looking fit as well, and it was a psychological thing. You looked the part for racing, you know. That was kind of the way it worked. But The rivalry was what made it.
Well, it's competition, isn't it? It's
but even Kelly then, he wasn't winning every... Like, people say, you know, he must have won every... He wasn't. It was hard to win. Hard to win an amateur race in Ireland. Because there was such a tough... There was 9 or 10 hard men that you had to beat every Sunday. And they all knew each other. They knew each other's form. They knew each other's tactics. So once one fella got up out of the saddle to make a move, they were all onto him like a... They'd latch onto him. It was a tough...
Oh, sure, sure, sure.
Kelly used to often say it was easier to win in Europe than it was in Ireland because yeah. they all knew each other so well, you know, and they were tough, hardy guys as well. So... And there was a few amateurs there, like there's a picture there, that guy there, Peter Dial. He was one of the best amateur bike riders in the world.
Yeah.
That guy. Yeah. And we were racing against him.
Yeah,
this fella. He won. Like he won. He rode the Olympics twice. The Mexico and what was the other one? Munich.
Yeah, that's right. You're right.
He rode the Olympics twice. Now that guy,
he was class though.
That guy was Kelly class, but he stayed amateur. He didn't turn professional. He was offered a professional contract and every year.
He was good enough to go.
His racing life. Yeah. He was so good, but he comes to Carrick every year. Still, he's nearly 80 now, but he comes down here to meet Kelly and just catch up. They have the chat. There's a kind of a mutual respect that's there right up to now. Like Sean, it's Sean comes out to meet him. So it's these guys were racing at amateur level when Kelly was on the way up. Now without him, he dragged Kelly's standard up. That's what it was about.
He had to beat him.
He was going away.
Well, I think he was good enough to finish in the first 10 in the Tour de France.
He was, yeah. He was the captain of the Irish team who would ride the Milk Race, which was a 14-day amateur race.
Vicious.
The Tour of Britain, Tour of Scotland. And he finished third overall in that race and won the King of the Mountains and the Pints in the
and
same race.
And he won
race.
A heap of stages.
He won a lot of stages. Oh, okay. So Ireland had these kind of fellas. And you were up against them every Sunday. So the standard was pretty high, you know. And so that's what Roach came out of this...
That group.
Yeah, out of that whole era, we'll say. So I think, like, it's no surprise to me how Kelly and Roach won so much. Because when you were up against the likes of him... You had to be that good. This was one of Kelly's racing jerseys.
Castle,
wasn't it? Yeah, that was his sponsor.
So was that the first one, Martin?
No, I think Flandria was the first one.
Flandria.
When you rode with Freddie Martins.
Oh.
What Kelly used to do with these old jerseys, he'd bring them all home, he'd give them to us. That was a jersey he would have given to. He gave that one to me, but there's heaps of them around.
Yeah.
He used to just.
We used to go out to the house, remember, with the young lads, see them?
Yeah.
Where they lived, you know.
Boxers. Yeah.
Well, now that to me is the Carrick jersey. That was
that's
the original.
Real, yeah.
The original Carrick Wheelers.
Maroon and red one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this jersey then.
Yeah.
Without going into it too much, there was another club formed, and this was the jersey. That was my jersey, actually. I gave it to Shane, and it was the first ones out of that club.
It was a nice colour, Martin, too.
Yeah, it was the Holdsworth.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, was that it?
Yeah.
And the side one, I thought that very nice. Yeah,
that was.
That's where we probably.
That was the one.
Drifted
after,
out. We drifted out of the.
Yeah, he got sponsorship.
Bobby worked with Showerings and Clonmel, and he got sponsorship.
You kind of went
for
professional.
That.
We went
sport. Yeah. I remember we used to hold a cycling.
The drift coaching, didn't that?
Was that an upgrade?
That was like a tracksuit.
I don't remember that one too much.
That was like the tracksuit
for that.
For that, wasn't it?
It looks like it.
Well, it's not really.
Did he upgrade?
We used to have
like a winter one. It's kind of.
a winter jersey.
Yeah, yeah. But we used to get, when we went from the locally made woolen ones, which were wonderful in the cold, but
by Jerry the
wet, twice as wonderful when it rained, because we were, they soaked up the wet, and we graduated up to the modern, as Martin said, the professional type jersey, yeah, which was made by Ipsport in England. And I remember we were holding a coaching, which was very successful in the technical school here. And the minister for sport at the time was Frank Fahey, a Galway man.
Yes, you're right.
And I remember I was chairman at the time, and I presented him foolishly with a jersey. And two things went wrong. The first thing he looked at, and there was a Union Jack on the label. And the other thing was that it wasn't made in Galway, because this crowd in Galway made all the jerseys, GA jerseys and all that.
O'Neill's.
Yeah. And he kind of took umbrage over not getting it. And I tried to explain to him that I think some of the clubs actually got O'Neill's to make jerseys, but they had the wrong material and they just fell apart, because you're in a jersey, like you're probably training in the same jersey and racing in the same jersey. Mm-hmm. And with the fella playing a game of football, hardly enough as he is, like he's only in it for an hour or so, you know. But you could be in that for 4 or 5 hours,
yeah,
racing,
yeah,
longer maybe, on a long
marathon.
Training. So they fell apart, but he went off in a huff anyway, like, so that was...
He was a bit fancy anyway.
He was. And won't say anymore.
No, you're right, man.
But he didn't hand back the jersey.
No, maybe the beauty.
Yeah. Yeah. But the different things, like, but... we the younger crew kind of took over Carrick Wheelers, like, my generation. I came from the... We were brought up by the likes of Sean and Tom Clyde and Tom Cudahy, Piltown. And we kind of took over the running of the club then, and of course we were reading the magazines. Like, it's hard to believe today, like Sean or Martin, when you'd have to get the tapes off of Kelly, he'd be coming home, he'd have the tapes, or Jim Keefe, the boys just go to the Tour de France and they'd be all in Dutch or...
You know,
we didn't have... So they'd be watching races, international races, and they'd be professional races, they'd be all... I still have some of them at home, the old Betamax, or what they call tapes, they're the beast. And then we saw from all that then, of the type of stuff, the gear they were wearing and the colours and all that, so we kind of... That brought us to this.
That's label.
And we're still at it today, like, you know. The younger, another crowd taking over today now, so... That's basically it.
Will you tell us the story of the time the lads went to Olympics,
yeah,
and the Moriartys and Cloughlin kind of
what was the story behind that story?
That was in Rome, Tom. Was it?
Well,
it was
Munich, where
Kelly and the McQuaid's went down.
Well, this was the team that went.
Yeah, and that's Liam Horner.
That's Liam Horner. Yeah, that's the team that went. But
I met him once.
Well, you see, it's to do with the split in cycling. You see, that was a political thing, but I look at it now and we didn't understand it at the time. We didn't know what was going on.
It was just wanted to race bikes, but it was...
You see, what happened was... I don't know if you want to go into that, because it's divisive.
Jeez, yeah, right,
we don't like to talk about it today, like, in the sense
that... Well, because you're so joined
in the past.
What I've done in the last couple of years is I've brought... The fellas together who were on the two sides,
yes, yeah,
and they come to my house, yeah, once a year, and we meet each other.
That's just fantastic.
And everybody's friendly with, yeah, each other now, even though at the time there was animosity between the two, because
that was buttoned into people.
To put it properly, you had a National Cycle Association, and you had the ICF and the NICF,
yeah,
which were the NICF and the ICF were the national or internationally recognised bodies,
yes,
that they could compete in, such as the Olympics
and
whereas
the
NCA couldn't.
Yeah, well, it was the good part about it was, in Carrick at the time, there was a split, right, and a fellow called Tony Ryan formed the other club, because he wanted to ride internationally. You couldn't if you were in the NCA. The NCA was born out of Irish nationalism. It was, and the British in some way vetoed the NCA
prevented him from riding international races. So there was a big problem then. And anybody like him who joined the other federation rode under the British. So this, you can imagine then.
We're talking 60s now and things were rough, you
know. The riders didn't know the politics of it. They just wanted to race on their bikes. I was the same. I was in this club and I joined the ICF to ride internationally.
So, well, that was the only way you could do it.
But we didn't really understand that.
Yeah.
Because it was at the time the narrative was, this crowd is better than the other crowd. This was going on. But when we were the bike riders.
You had the likes of Seamus O'Hanlon versus the Peter Doyles, you know.
You had top
men on both sides, you know.
Which was a pity.
But the lucky part about it was, Kelly came along just at the time when Tony Ryan formed that club. And Kelly wouldn't have known anything about
it. No.
The politics of it. He just went in and rode his bike, and suddenly he was junior champion of Ireland. He was sent to the junior world championships. He wouldn't have known anything about the split. That wouldn't have happened. We wouldn't have had a Sean Kelly if Tony didn't form that club.
Yeah.
And I rode internationally as well under the banner with Kelly.
Yeah, you rode it too.
So the thing was, it worked good, but it did a lot of damage because the Ross Taunton was the race for fellas like Sean, who could work every day, train Tuesday and Thursday, race on a Sunday, ride the Ross Taunton. But this international, that was so competitive. The Ross Taunton didn't survive. And to this day now, you have a kind of a half Ross Taunton. What happened was, all these big teams started coming to the Ross Taunton. It lifted the standard, but it blew out all the ordinary clubmen out of the water. Yeah. They couldn't ride it because it was too hard and too fast. And then not suddenly, but over the years, it needed big sponsorship then to survive. So that was impossible to get over the last few years.
Yeah, well, they're good teams.
This to me, though, sorry, Sean, big loss in the whole picture. When I look at the whole picture, I wish we had the Ross Taunton again, that club riders could ride a race.
Yeah, no, you can't, because
you can't. You might ride it as a C3 or something. But when Sean was riding it, he was on the Tipperary team, he'd get placed in stage at the Ross Taunton against the best riders in it, or could win a stage.
I remember the Czechs, the Poles, the Russians, and the French.
Yeah, too. You might have won big team coming to it, you know. But now we have no national tour. We have the Ross Taunton still, but it's a very watered down version.
Yeah.
You can't afford the big money to run the race.
Yeah.
I think it costs about 10,000 a team, just each team now, to put them through the race. Yeah. You'd need 10 grand of a sponsorship just for a team, you know.
Yeah.
So it's changed.
And it's only 3 days or 4 days.
5 days.
But a lot of other things have changed as well. The whole safety, the whole
The roads.
Roads. You can't finish a race into a town anymore.
Yeah.
Because there's bollards and there's safety and there's problems. You finish it out of the country now, so there's no atmosphere when you finish a race.
Yeah.
It has to be in some obscure place where there's no crowd, there's nothing.
Sean used to always say, we're out racing for the crows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have our annual race now. St. Patrick's Day, so it's going back.
The Kiley Cup
going back to
Sean won it 3 times.
But that's now, we used to finish that in the town here, like, but it eventually came to the stage where traffic was unmanageable, like, you know, and people were giving out to us and the guards weren't happy with it. So now we have to run it out in County Waterford and finish it in Clonay in County Waterford.
Yeah, out
in the country, like. And so the only people you have there is the people who come with the bikes.
No, you just have the officials there, you know, and that's sad.
It's a pity,
The races in Carrick.
It would be top class racing.
It used to be great crowds.
They used to finish down there at the Gales Barracks and they'd all come out of the pub to watch the race.
Yeah.
But you could have half the town out, yeah. and everybody'd know the riders. Yeah. That's gone. Yeah. It's no atmosphere.
We had a great event one time with the remember the Bank of Ireland Grand Prix, and yeah. we used to bring it through the town down O'Mahony Avenue, come around yeah. Glenbower,
yeah,
out that way, and we'd come up yeah. into Carrick. We wouldn't go into the town, but we used to finish it up on the main street. We'd switch down at the corner O'Mahony Avenue. Mm-hmm. But a certain person, there was slagging in the cycling magazine in England over this thing. Fella mentioned Guinness, like, you know, the steward was drunk, which he wasn't at all. Like, it was just a yeah. swammy comment. Like, but what had happened was there was a big team from England in the race, mm-hmm. and now I was involved in it deeply, and every rider got a map of the course, because a lot of them wouldn't have rode it, and they also, on that was a big note on it, that on the last lap they went straight into the town, they didn't go the other way, so we ended up in a ridiculous situation, so where you had two races finishing on the line like that, one yeah. from one side of the town, and they came at the one time. Now they actually sprinted through one another. So we figured it out some way, so we had to do double prizes. They all had to get a prize. But how they didn't hit one another is still a mystery. But it was just the first guy leading the race, when he kept on, he didn't cut through, and obviously the steward that was there wasn't alert enough to block the road with his body or whatever. But it was the only time we had a race in Carrick where we had two race finishes. One from the left, one from the right. It only happened like that.
It could happen, yeah.
But, you know, one of the funny sides, but nobody was hurt.
So, lads, the tap by Tour de France is coming in September. It'll be good to see a big enough kind of a cycling event in Carrick again.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And what course, see the crowds. Sorry, Bob, what course are you picking?
There's two routes. There's a 100k route and a 145k route. One of the big climbs is the Seskin.
Are you going up that?
Yeah.
Are you familiar with Seskin? Jesus Christ,
you know Seskin, right, do you?
Well, we do.
It's the train on that.
Well, they used to go home that way. Well, Martin was actually on the real Seskin side.
Yeah, the trick there was when we used
and
to finish...
And Kelly was on the non-Seskin
yeah,
side.
Yeah, we used to finish training.
Yeah.
And you had to go up in the saddle.
Yeah.
After the training.
That was the torture.
Was that it, man? Yeah.
That was to stay in the saddle.
Up Seskin.
No, with Pat McQuaid, when he was coming for the Nissan for a stage, and we were looking around, the crowd was Jim Keefe and Bobby and myself. I think Larry was in it, and we were to show him all the different areas around the town. He was looking for a town circuit, like, you know.
Yeah.
And so one of us thought of it anyway. There's a few fellas that are laying claim to this now, but we went up Seskin, mm-hmm. and we called it, which was Paddy. We always called it Paddy Gray's Hill.
Yeah. That was it.
It was never Seskin, but Seskin actually went on straight. That's where he lived up
yeah.
there, Martin.
Yeah.
And then he went left where it goes now. That was up Paddy. Well, I don't even know what the name of that was. Like,
well, it's a very tough one.
Are you sure about going up there? Because the Tour de Waterford stopped going up there because there was fellas weren't able to.
Yeah.
There's a point.
I did a place there.
Just very top there now.
Near
savage.
The golf course.
Oh, like, savage. Yeah.
A lot of people will keel over there
yeah.
They won't.
But Pat McQuaid loved the name Seskin. It had a ring to it, like,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
So he said we'll call it Seskin. Like,
that's a dirty fucking climb now.
Oh, it is.
The 100 kilometres, that's doable by everyone. Really.
Yeah. Yeah.
The 140.
But that's going up Seskin as well.
Yeah. The other Seskin, up by Powers and Pot. Well, they start here, they go to Clonmel Road, they turn left to Bulmers, and then go up Tincor, is it?
Tincor.
Fellas want to be doing altitude training.
Yeah. Tincor is savage.
Yeah, that's
take a month off work.
Remember Andy Garman when he was up there one year. There was a stage of
Barry Meehan has a record for chicken car, hasn't he?
I see.
The speed going up it.
Oh, yeah.
That's a dirty.
Oh, that's a savage one, yeah.
Do you might have to change the route altogether?
We used to fly up them one time.
Yeah, no bother to
now,
you.
Like,
yeah. Oh, well, now, what would be the average kind of age group?
Be older, yeah. Be like over 40, 45, kind of. It's the kind of leisure cyclists. Now, there'll be a gang of them that'll be, like, say, 10% of them will be racing, the rest of them will be going. We had it in Clarny last year. and we found out there were 10 or 15.
So it's all old fellas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You need the John, well. The John of God ambulance.
I met a guy in Dumbarese last weekend that we were down at. We had a little night out down there. And this guy, when he found out from Carrick, he said, oh, he said, I've cycled Seskin, you know, last week, you know. And he said, I don't know, the Garmin that came in and, you know, I was able to, I was telling his output and watts and all he was closer to 70, you know, but he was a fit looking bugger now. He was like yourself now, very similar build to you. And he was thrilled to bits that he conquered Seskin, you know.
Brilliant.
And he was delighted with it, you know.
And when you were training, I said back when you were younger, like, I suppose now they have, you know, heart rate monitors, they have power meters.
None of that.
They have all that. Oh my God. How did you know how hard you were going, or what was there a program set out, or how did you do that?
We had, 18 miles an hour, this was the thing.
Yeah.
We had a fella, Tony Ryan was his name. He'd stay going at the same, he had a gear, 42-16. And I remember Sean used to say to me, fucker, up a hill, down a hill, you couldn't. He'd stay all day long, he could hammer you, he'd wear you down. He was like our speedometer, and he knew exactly how long the ride would take, how long it was. He was a very meticulous man with training programs and details and coaching. We were lucky he was there.
He was very
good rider himself as well, but he was totally and utterly dedicated to the sport. So we didn't need any speedometers or anything with him. Because at 10 o'clock, if you didn't turn up, he'd ride out to the ESB offices, the old ESB offices, out of the back of his house. He wouldn't stop, and it didn't matter if you were Sean Kelly or if you weren't there at 10 o'clock, he'd go up the Clonmel Road. Yeah. It was tough luck. You had to catch up, you know. He was very disciplined. So he stood out to me as being the fella responsible for a lot of the... He helped everyone. Bobby Power as well. You know,
he built a bike for you.
In his own house, he was that kind of a fella. So dedicated. Yeah. And I think Tony was a huge part of the whole story.
I give him that, yeah.
There was one brilliant story about Tony.
Dirk Gabaldi.
The three of us went to a race in Dublin, Sean, Tony and myself. And it was the big race of the day. And it was a tough enough old course at the back of the airport, I'll always remember. But there was the usual hill on it. And Kelly and myself were in the breakaway with about 8 or 9 riders established at the front. But we could hear some fella shouting, roaring back the road. And Sean said to me, "That's Ryan," he said. "And he can't get on." And I said to him, "Sure, fuck it, he's too far back now, what can we do?" And Sean said to me, "We better wait for him or we'll never hear the end of it. We're home in the car." So the two of us, we hung back, and he got onto the back of us. So we had to put the heads down and catch the brake, which we did. So I was looking at this, and there was 3 Carrick men in this brake. And you had the McQuaids, the Lallys, and the Northern fellas. So I said to myself, right, one of us has to win this race. So I sat on the back for 20 miles the whole way. When I got to the finish, I won the sprint. Tony was second and Sean was third. The three, we were first, second and third in the race. But there was uproar because I sat on the back. This was breaking the rules.
We won't say the word
of honour. I scrubbed.
I was waiting for you to say it. I wasn't going to say it to you.
But the point is, the point was there were 3 Carrick men there. Hmm. Men there, so I figured one of us had to win because it would have been stupid if we didn't. I didn't think the other two would be second and third, but there was one particular fella there. Tony Lally was his name. He was after telling everyone he was going to win that race during the week. He was top rider now. He couldn't get it. He abused the language he used after the race. But it was healthy competition for us. We won the fucking thing. We didn't care. We were from Carrick. And it was just one of those things where, you know, it was good to come out of there being first, second and third from here.
Yeah,
you
it's
know,
a big achievement. Yeah.
That kind of thing. So after that, we heard that some of them fellas, they were taking weeks off work to train to beat us. This was, yeah. One fella in particular took 2 weeks off because he was cracking up. He was saying, what the fuck are these fellas doing? You know, how are they coming up here and challenging us or beating us? You know, this was the kind of rivalry was there at the time. It was good though, you know.
We had to meet from school to get an interview for a job or do an exam for a job at civil service. There wasn't a job in Ireland in 71. Couldn't a job, we couldn't get a job in Ireland. And or very few of them anyway. And we said to the Christian Brothers of Ovid that we wanted a day off to do the exam. And they said, no, that's not a job for you. Like, now, we hadn't a clue what the job was. Some of us saw an ad in the paper for an exam, a civil service exam. So we mitched school anyway. And we went down, and Bobby actually came 11th in the country on the exam, but he decided to go to university. And Larry and myself actually got a job in the P&T at the time. And we stayed there for, Larry stayed there 40 years. I was there for 36 years out of that time. But when we got the job, of course, we had money in our pockets. And what did we do? We threw the bikes in the corner and we went on the beer for 4 years.
I thought you were going to say you bought new bikes.
No, yeah. No, we were very bold and we had a great time, and we were going on a holiday to Mallorca, I remember, and Sean was riding the World Championships in England, I think, at the time.
Was it Goodwood?
Yeah. And we took time to see it in the Swiss cottage. I remember the pub going up to the airport. And before we went, and we saw it there, so we had a great, we were young men at the time, we had a great drinking holiday, and at the end of the holiday we said we're going back on the bike, we have to go back on the bike, and that was 77. And we rode the Ross the next year, all three of us, and we kept going, and then when I came back to Carrick, then I concentrated on the, I was too lazy. I went for the easy option. I concentrated on the administration of the club. The two boys raced for years and years. Bobby was an international rider.
Yeah,
a great career. Larry Rome won many races. His brother Paddy. Kelly was mad about him, but Paddy was a small fella.
Yeah.
He was tough as nails, like, you know, but Kelly was cracked about him, you know. He'd be always going on about Paddy.
The crack, yeah.
The crack with him, you know. But that was basically, yeah. Like, and I'm still involved in the club today anyway. And we're still there, and we run a kiddies night above in the park up in the Clonmel Road on a Monday night, and we're starting tonight, and we're running a league down in Carl's Cross, and all the top riders of the region will be in that, like, and
Dungarvan fellas,
Dungarvan Waterford fellas, and all the area from the Slieve na Mann Club. What's the name of that club, Martin? You know those guys up there?
Old Portlaw fellas, is it?
No, I'm not sure.
Old Slieve na Mann would be Kilcash, Kilsheelan crowd. Yeah,
there are a crowd of lads up there now as well, so they'll all be down, and they run another section of it, and we really run another section. So you have a continuity, longer lead. I think it is five or six events. Mm-hmm. So you have maybe 10 events in total.
Yeah.
Just a good training for the lads.
Yeah, well, I suppose what we're telling you here, lads, now is a very watered down version of what.
Yes, very
a real story.
Steady on the back. We've done well so far. Let's not fall in the last one.